Welcome back to the final hour of this Friday edition of the Tom and Curly Show. Tom Tangney here, John Curley on vacation, a well-earned vacation, I'm sure, and we have word that he's not enjoying himself, so that should make us all feel sympathetic toward this this abandonment of duties for John, and Danny O'Neill obviously filling in.
Is he on a red couch?
Oh,
do we know?
That was one of the letters of the day. I think he's just getting back to you, Tom, for all the time you were off.
Could
be. He's probably found a comfy red couch somewhere.
Could be.
milking it for sympathy. Make sure you text the Online Trading Academy text line at 989873, or get on the the MyNorthWest.com inbox if you want to email us as well. And sometime in this hour, we'll tell you about how to win the Muckleshoot Bingo Opera tickets for Il Trovatore later in this hour. We're going to start off this hour with Jay Inslee. Jay Inslee's been in the news an awful lot because of all the speculation about him running for the presidency. And so now there's a poll out that talks about how Washington voters feel about Jay Inslee. I don't think we've had a chance, Danny, the two of us, to talk about Jay Inslee either as governor or as a presidential, whether he's of presidential timber or not. My basic take is I think he's a fine governor, but he just does not seem to me to have what it takes to become a national contender.
What's he done? Well, like, what would you, if you're going to point to things that he's done?
Okay, first off, the death penalty issue, I think, was a bold move at the time, and now the Supreme Court has backed him up, shored him up, and says, yes, it's indeed unconstitutional. I think the fact that he has been hammering and or yammering on climate change shows that he has been on top of a major issue that keeps getting neglected, not only around the country, but also in this state, this very relatively, I won't say very, but relatively green state and definitely a blue state, that I think he's done, in effect, the will of the people enough to be a decent governor. But for me, there's something about you need a kind of charisma, or there's got to be something about you that seems to be worthwhile beyond state lines. And he strikes me as something of a kind of a slow talker and all this. I just don't see that he has what it takes to make it. Whether the climate change, most of the knocks against him was he's a one issue candidate, it's climate change, and that's not enough to win a nomination, let alone a presidency. And I kind of agree with that. I'm fine with him being my governor, but I don't know, as president, I mean, I wouldn't, it would be a step up as far as I'm concerned, considering who we have now. But then that's my partisanship showing.
I think he's overly Pollyannish. It's interesting to hear the polls that they put out, and the polls, it was a Crosscut Elway poll.
Yes.
That was commissioned.
Commissioned, yeah, by
and
Crosscut.
He's got the highest approval rating he's had. And it's interesting because there's four categories, right?
Yeah.
There's excellent, good, there's fair.
Fair and poor.
And not good. And essentially, right now, I think it's 46% identified him with the two positive categories.
Yep. I thought it was 48, 46.
Maybe 40, it's 40, 48.
48, yes.
48% identified him as being good or
yes.
excellent.
Yeah.
And then 46% identified him as being
fair
only
poor.
Fair or
yeah.
poor.
Which they lumped together, and I think legitimately so, is kind of a negative. And so he's barely above water. The
2 years ago, he had a 45% were positive.
Yes.
But 50% felt negatively
yes.
about him.
And right now, what's interesting about what's happening is that he's at his most popular in this state, although we just heard of the news, you know, some griping about it. Is he more concerned about the national issues of the day than the state issues of the day? The whole, the McCleary decision is behind him now, but is he addressing the issues that need to be addressed in the state? And that's a classic stance against anybody who's running for president as well. What about the people back home? But the interesting wrinkle about this, so yes, he's more popular in the state than ever before, barely, but still that's of some significance as he's in his second term already, and you tend to kind of lose popularity the longer you stay in office. But these Washington voters are unsure, is how the headline goes, of his presidency, whether they would support his presidency.
He's likable, but he's not charismatic. That would be my
description.
There you
go. Yeah, that's a good, yeah.
That he looks very good. Mm-hmm. He wears a suit incredibly well. I support his stance on climate change and uh-huh. those things. I also believe that his governing style and the style that he's is to present it as this is the best thing for all people involved, and being environmentally and considerate of the climate is best for business going forward and finding solutions, that he's he's less about the nuts and bolts of governing than he is about taking a very placid approach to everything, and we can all get through this.
Yeah.
He's pretty much the exact...
Yeah.
I feel like, honestly, as someone, I want someone to come in there with more of a hard-edge agenda.
Okay.
Like that's honestly... And I feel like with Jay Inslee, you're going to get a lot of overall things that people aren't going to be able to oppose. Like, who wants a legislator that's going there like, forget the environment, man. We're going to screw that thing over. And it's all these broad-based, we can do it, our better selves, without being and having an edge to it of here's what I stand for and here's what I'm going to get done.
You know, I think it's funny, though. I think that you could have an edgy governor, if that's the appropriate, or an agenda governor. And he proposed something like, I am putting... He didn't do away with the death penalty, but he basically said, no death penalty is going to be engineered on my watch as long as I'm governor. That could be seen as that's pretty edgy. That's pretty agenda-oriented.
Do you think so, though?
But, well, yeah, I mean, I do. Just because
really?
I have been against the death penalty since, I mean, I campaigned against the death penalty when I was in college. I mean, it's been a big issue for me, and I know I'm on the minority side. And now, finally, it's starting to gain
I don't know, man. In Washington, I can't imagine people going up against him. No, man, we're going to kill some people. We're gonna.
Well, the thing is, well, yeah, I can tell you haven't fought the fight in the trenches because most people. Although I got to say, there has been a shift, and John and I've talked about this. John's kind of shifted over to my side because he realizes he's talked to a lot of, I don't know how many, but he says he's talked to people who've been victims of crimes and they've had their the death penalty carried out, and he says it doesn't do any. There's no relief for the victims. Usually, the argument, I think, the best, most compelling argument is it. If you have been wronged by society, then you have the right to try to inflict that wrong on somebody else. And if it doesn't give you any relief, then why bother? A lot of people that, and they tend to be on the liberal side, but not necessarily. If you've been the victim of a crime and you feel like, you know, the death penalty is too strong, you should be able to weigh in on that. It's expensive and all these other kinds of things. But anyway, I don't want to get into the whole death penalty issue. But I think my point was about his. I think it's his demeanor. It's not his agenda. It's his demeanor. I think somebody who you would consider harder edged could have the same agenda as Jay Inslee, but he doesn't have that kind of. There's a soft, kind of, which I think also might explain his appeal to the voters is that he has this kind of. Yeah, so this aw shucks, Midwestern kind of, even if he's saying inflammatory things, if you are a conservative and you can't stand what he has to say, he does it in kind of a gentle, kind of a genial way, I guess. And I think that may be why he keeps getting elected and maybe why you feel like he's ineffective or not effective enough because he seems too soft on the edges, not agenda-driven enough.
I think he's fine as a governor. I can't imagine getting fired up and pumped up to vote for Jay Inslee. As long as he's not Howard Schultz, though. I was made aware of a Twitter account yesterday that's called Draft Schultz.
Well, we've talked a lot. I mean, we've talked a lot about Schultz's potential presidency.
Hashtag ready for Schultz.
Yes. You didn't know that there was a candidate? I mean,
I've heard him talk about it. I would like to say that... The one thing that offers me encouragement that this won't ever be a possibility is that we've already seen at the first sign of difficulty, he folds up shop. Like, he's going to get into the primary, he's not going to get his way, and then, well, he's going to sell his whole campaign to China and say that, oh, it's for the good of my campaign that I've done this.
Bitter, bitter, bitter Danny O'Neill.
Absolutely bitter.
But the point is, I think he suffers from the same thing that a lot of people from this state suffer from. I don't think he's charismatic enough. I like his stance. As CEOs go, I think Howard Schultz has been fantastic on the issues of the day. But he has this real kind of, maybe I hadn't made that connection with Jay Inslee. He's got this kind of soft edge to it. Why can't we all get along kind of approach to things? It just seems too namby-pamby and not, as you were saying, edgy enough or something. I don't think he sees Donald Trump with no political experience, but he's managed to stay in business for many years. He says, well, what did he do that I can't do? And I think he, from that point of view, he's right. He just doesn't have, to me, what it takes to
Donald
be charismatic.
Donald Trump didn't sell a franchise to get it relocated from
Donald
the
Trump
city,
did
that,
many
city
more
that, li-
things
that
worse
he lived in.
That. He's guaranteed of getting a vote in Oklahoma City, I would think.
Yeah, probably. And that should tell you everything you need to know about it.
I think we're getting a little off topic.
Don't vote for Benedict Arnold.
And the idea here is that Jay Inslee has, just to wrap this up, Jay Inslee has a lot of support as governor, but even the people that support him as governor are not thrilled with the prospects of him being president, although he still has a lot of support for that from the state. So he still could be seen as something of a favorite son. Okay, boy, we're running out of time, Danny. I want to run this quickly by you, this idea. There is an organization, I think it's called Lambda, that is raising money in such a way to allow people to go to college and they don't have to pay tuition. What they have to do is they have to guarantee a percentage of their income once they get out if they find a job. However, there are two nice caveats for an English major like me. If you can't find a job, then you don't have to pay the tuition back. And the second thing is, if you make under, like, say, 50 grand, you don't have to pay it back either. Now, for the art history majors of the world and the English majors of the world. And
how much do we know about this investment group? That's because it's Lambda, right?
Yes,
it's Lambda. Lambda is the online learning facility that's using this, and it's $30 million.
It's got $30 million in funding led by one of Peter Thiel's disciples,
and
Jeff
Kutcher,
Lewis.
Right? The kid from that 70s show?
No. Jeff Lewis.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and Ashton Kutcher is also... So you're holding this entire idea against him because Ashton Kutcher has enough money that he's throwing. He's an actor investor now.
No, I would say this honestly.
Values
I think
the school at $150 million now.
I love that idea.
Okay.
I don't know how kids are going to college. I'm 44 years old.
Yeah.
I paid for my own college.
Okay.
But I did it in part through, I got a scholarship from Weyerhaeuser, which is where my father worked.
And loans.
And
right?
loans.
Yes.
And I came out, I think I came out with, it was like $8,000 or $9,000,
yeah.
I think, in student loan debt. But I look at it now,
yeah.
if you did what I did and had to pay for your own college through working and all of that, you'd come out of school. I think if I took the same approach I did now, I'd have $30,000
yes.
in debt.
Oh, I think the average college student has $34,000 in debt, are in debt. And so, yeah, it is. And I mean, my daughters have that and more. And it's like, yeah, it is. It really does cripple their future. And so there's a part of me that really likes this. I find it very appealing.
Here's what I would say about it, though. I took a liberal arts education. I was a history major.
Okay.
I did not qualify myself to have any job.
Yeah.
I would have been a poor investment for someone.
Yes.
That, if I applied for, hey, would you pay for my college? Not really sure what I want to do. Would kind of like to write, maybe work at a newspaper. Yeah. Any actual investor looking at that would be, this person's a great candidate to serve fries into his 30s.
Yes.
Like that's what it is. And if you have it as an investment opportunity, because they're investing in it not because they believe in education, but believe that, hey, this is a way that we can get a return on our investment.
Yes.
Are you going to see more vocational training? I think it's an interesting question.
Yes. Well, in fact, and to be fair to this concept, you're right. There are all sorts of holes. Those holes are what you and I find appealing, but they do not exist yet. Right now, they're primarily going to people in the technology field. So if you graduate in computer science, if you're trained to be a coder, then they will pay for your education because they know they are pretty certain that you'll be able to get a decent paying job and you'll be able to pay them back. By the way, just to kind of give the parameters of this, you only have to pay a percentage of your tuition for a couple of years. It's not like for the rest of your life. One of the knocks against this is, the college students then become indentured servants because for the rest of their life they'll be paying this off.
That's not any different than it is now, man.
It's actually...
I mean, they're becoming indentured servants now. It's the student loan that's following them around.
Yes. No, I think that's an excellent point. But they do say that what they're hoping to do, ideally, is to expand their offerings to other majors and eventually to all majors. And yeah, the big question is, will it pencil out? And that's where you think it might not. I think if you are giving, let's say you got a computer science guy and you are giving him free tuition, and let's say, like $200,000, let's say it costs $200,000 to educate this guy. He's going to get out and get a good job. And if you get 17% of his salary for a few years, he will more than pay back what he got from you. It's basically like taking out a loan with these guys instead of actual banks. The danger is, they say, that you could end up paying up to 250% of the value of your education to these people, but they also made it possible for you to go, and so I think that seems like a trade-off. And my hunch is government regulations will come in and say, okay, this is how much margin you can have, but at least it makes education available to people. Whether it's going to be ever available to liberal arts majors like you and me, Danny, is...
What'd you major in?
I majored in English.
Yeah.
I think it's a great training. Listen, I would recommend if anybody has, I think you should become an English major or a history major. If you can write, if you can learn to read and write and analyze stuff, you're in great shape for a lot of jobs. However, it's not a specific job. And so you cannot get out. I mean, I tilled a field in a lot of jobs before. I ended up in radio without any intention of being in radio, much like you. But I think if you can write and reason and be able to, you know, speak publicly and all this, there are lots of jobs that are open for you. But it's a foundational job. It's not a vocational job like, oh, because of this, I can go then do that.
It's an interesting decision that people make. Because when I talk to college kids or people that are interested in either becoming a journalist or those sort of, there's a lot of different paths you can take to that point. But the one thing that you can't ever, and I think that this applies to any sort of liberal arts degree, is that you can't expect that to have a natural pathway to anything other than teaching. If you're going to do anything other than teaching, you're going to have to use your own sort of ingenuity or your own idea of direction to be able to get something. And if you're looking at it as, is that a worthwhile investment? From a fiscal standpoint, I would generally think that's pretty shaky. And I wonder if we'll see more vocational training, because you hear about it in European countries. You do have more of that.
Yeah.
That you can get a classical liberal arts education or you can get vocational training. Yeah.
Well, the problem, the European model, the problem I have is that they direct you. They tell you at the age of 15, okay, you know what? You're going into vocational, you know, even if you want it, even if you had academic yearnings, if your grades didn't match out. I mean, they're much harsher in terms of, you know, how they funnel you in and out of various programs. That'd be my one knock.
We're not treating them enough like individual snowflakes. I think they could use a little more tough love in here, this country, Tom.
Yeah,
a little bit more
right.
Like, the world needs ditch diggers, too.
Dash your dreams. Dash your dreams. No, I think that's a terrible. The one thing I would say also for people considering a college and kind of a drifting, something like an English or history major, you can always then focus, if you're willing to do another year or two of school, you can get your master's in a specific field. If you are good at writing and reading and analysis and that kind of stuff, you can then, if you've learned that kind of basis, then you can apply it to all sorts of fields. If you suddenly decide you want to go into something like oceanography or something, you will be a well-read, well-spoken reader and analysis of things, and then you can focus your attention at the master's level. It's not just because you get an English major, you can't get a real job. You just may have to go to the next level of education.
I think I could benefit from knowing a trade.
Yeah.
I did some remodeling work on my house. Like, I think I'd benefit from knowing a trade, either woodworking.
But do you think that you'd be better at that trade without your history education?
I don't think I'd need it. My history.
Yeah, you don't think you need it?
I wouldn't trade those 4 years because I had a blast. But there's definitely been parts of me of like, would I have been a happier person if I hadn't gone and futzed around with a typewriter and a keyboard all these years?
Yeah.
Like, that maybe I could have been much happier doing
you
that.
You think so?
Yeah, absolutely. Man, the satisfaction of a well-tiled shower stall when I put that together. That was as satisfying as anything I've ever written.
Well, what if you had to do that, 40 hours a week? The idea is, the satisfaction is, and then think how thrilled it would be. Wow, I could talk sports all day. And if you were a tile filer and you got a chance to go on the radio, you think this is a lot of fun.
I would agree with you. I would tend to say that we need a little more of the European separation into you're gonna go learn something useful to do. We don't want you doing math anymore.
All right, Danny.
It is the Tom and Curly Show. We'll roll on this Friday.
That's right. We're gonna get to the 420 milepost start.
Are you serious?
Yeah,
we're gonna do it.
That. Yes, as long as you're here, why not?
Yeah. Well, here there's about 1,000 signs around the state of Washington. I think it's 1,800, and some 200 of them are missing. We'll explain why next.
Welcome back to the final half hour of this Friday edition of the Tom and Curly Show. Tom Tangney here, John Curly away on vacation. Danny O'Neill having a blast with Danny filling in for John. So, the Luckle Shoot Bingo Know-It-All Contest. This is the time we normally do the contest. We are not going to be doing the quiz, but we are going to give you a chance to win our Friday prize brought to you by Muckleshoot Bingo. Today, in fact, right now, someone's going to win two tickets to Seattle Opera's Il Trovatore, Verdi's hot-blooded melodrama. Performances start tomorrow. This grand presentation will fill McCall Hall with more than 75 cast members. Yeah, it's one of those big to-do operas. Imposing sets, elaborate period costumes for an unforgettable night at the opera. Learn more at seattleopera.org. That's Il Trovatore. So, right now, call this number, 888-973-5476. That's 888-973-5476 for a couple of free tickets to the opera, Verdi's one of Verdi's most popular operas around. Okay, good luck and enjoy. So we've got a couple of stories we want to sort of wrap up our week with, kind of that we found amusing or enjoyable. And one is these milepost signs. Apparently, there has been a run on a couple of numbers on milepost signs. I can't quite figure this out. Danny, can you explain? For some reason, milepost 420 and milepost sign 69 seem to be stolen on a regular basis. What gives?
There's 8,245 milepost markers in this state.
Okay.
Four times as many as I might have led you to believe
in the last segment. Yeah. That's called over-delivering.
8,245. Of those, 200 have been stolen, taken, removed. And it's not a mystery why. 69 is a reference to a specific sexual positioning.
That's how the Seattle Times puts it. I love that.
And 420 is a reference to dope smoking.
That's right.
The reefer.
Yes.
Weed. Ganja. The devil's lettuce.
It's like a 15-minute segment on your show, Danny David Moore,
I generally like to make a lot of weed jokes.
That's right.
It's one of my favorite things to do.
Non-stop.
And, which is strange because people will have a lot of different explanations for what 420 signifies and why it's associated with marijuana smoking.
Yes.
And almost none of them are right.
Okay, so it's not 20 minutes after 4, after the school day's over, that's when they all get...
That might have been part of the impetus, but it's not the penal code for a marijuana citation in California.
Okay.
It has nothing to do with the number of different types of strains or anything like that. Best anyone can tell, it was a reference to a group of students in Marin County called the Waldos, who would go gather to smoke pot at 420.
At 420,
and somehow it's become a national phenomenon.
That's
reference.
Right. But, you know, we don't just bring you the news about, isn't this something terrible, vandalism, you know, to the nth degree, all these markers are being stolen. We have a solution.
It's ingenious.
Oh, there you go. That's pretty good for a Friday afternoon. The State Department of Transportation has come up with a brilliant idea, Danny. And what is it?
Instead of replacing mile marker 69... which will just get stolen again because it's still the same number that all these little derelict youths want to take. 68.9.
That's right.
No one's going to want to steal that. Who wants a fractional mile marker?
Well,
420.1?
Yeah.
Or 419.9? It accomplishes the exact same goal that they would have wanted to have as a mile marker without the incentive for theft.
So my guess is, though, my hunch is that some smart derelict, as you put him, will come up with a sexual position that'll match 68.9. Just to
don't give him any ideas,
just to
Tom.
Be funny.
The but, feral youth of our country.
we'll see how that goes. But anyway, the reason they're saying, yeah, they talked to the WashDOT and they said, yeah, we understand. It's just a joke. It is kind of funny, and I'm human. I get it. It's funny too. However, it does cost the taxpayers $1,000 each time one of those things is stolen. Now, $1,000 times 200, it's not the end of the world. It's not going to break our budget, but still, it is a cost. And then the other thing that never even occurred to me was, especially in rural areas, they say first responders rely on those mileposts. And if there's a missing milepost, because a lot of people are saying, well, you could probably go from 419 milepost to 421. It's not going to be the end of the world. But if you are trying, if you are in a hurry, there's some kind of emergency and you use those, there may be serious consequences. But all in all, that's just sort of a curiosity. By the way, Colorado has the same problem that Washington State does
kidding?
With 420.
You know that's how you could determine steps. Which state has most stoners.
Right.
Based it on per capita thefts of 420 signs.
But I don't think a true stoner would have the ingenuity to figure out how to get one of those things off.
Oh, no, man. If you want to talk about like wasteful things, like nobody better than stoners at video games, sign stealing, or bong construction. It's amazing. It's amazing the levels of creativity that can be applied by stoners to those situations.
Okay. Well, got to move on to another story, which I find very intriguing. The Impossible Burger 2.0. There's this really good article written on CNET that talks about it tastes so. The Impossible Burger is like a fake burger. It's
there's no meat. It's not fake. It exists.
Yeah, it's a real thing.
It's in truth. It does exist. It's not an imaginary burger.
No meat.
There's no meat.
I've got one brother who's a vegetarian, and oh my god, when we're barbecuing the burgers, and he puts out his lonely little garden burgers.
I think those
on
are
the
hilarious.
Grill. I kind of wince and feel sad for him or bad for him. But anyway, Impossible Burger, their efforts is to try to create something that a burger that doesn't have meat that tastes just like it does burger. And the woman that's writing this article says it tastes so real it made this vegetarian stomach turn. I love this idea. We're going to hear from Laura Kilman first. She's the senior flavor scientist at Impossible Foods. She talks about the ingredients of this particular burger.
Now in the new recipe is a soy protein. So that's different than before, which was a wheat protein. So it now has a much like beefier chew and this sort of coarse grind that consumers expect from a really high quality meat. And what we do is we take the dry soy protein and we hydrate it with the water and potato protein, and then the magic ingredient is heme. In the potato protein is also where we have all of our flavor precursors in beef, and then we replicate that exact same flavor generation upon cooking, but just by starting with ingredients from plants. And so all of these sort of nutrients, amino acids, and sugars that then create like the natural delicious flavor when you brown meat, the smell and everything, that is all in this ingredient here.
Okay, so I think this is, I have yet to taste something that tastes like a burger, but I would be willing to try this. The nice thing is they're calling it 2.0. They're going to continue, honing and working on this. I love the idea that, because I understand why vegetarians or even vegans for that matter, politically it makes a lot of sense that it is a wasteful way to raise food, I think, is to have to kill all these animals.
It's not about efficiency, isn't it? Isn't it that it's cruel?
No. But it's also, it's economically, it costs a lot more to raise beef, cattle, than it does to, if we ate, plant-based food, let's say. Something like that. So the idea is it can be economically safer, and you can feed the rest of the world much more
I thought it was more about willingly. Ethics than it is about practicality.
No, I think there are two aspects of it. The whole ethical demeanor. Do we have the right to take the life of an animal, and is it unnecessarily cruel the way we're raising these animals just for our
I love animals.
To death.
I do. I love them. They're delicious.
Yes, exactly.
They'd also eat us if they could, right?
No, I think that's fine, but are we the next level up? Anyway, I didn't want to get distracted into the philosophical argument, but I understand that. If I can get by without eating meat but have the taste of meat in my mouth, I'm more than happy for this
Doesn't
to happen.
Doesn't that defeat the purpose of being a vegan?
That's the question. And since I'm not a vegan and I'm not a vegetarian, I have heard from vegans and vegetarians who say this is disgusting. That the whole point is we should be weaning ourselves off the taste of meat, not trying to mimic it and get away with it, which to me seems, I guess it's philosophically a legitimate argument, but it seems like, why bother? If it tastes the same and it doesn't do the damage to the animals, we're better off. I'm all for it.
We're animals, right?
We are animals.
We're animals.
Well, we're more than just animals, Dan.
Yeah, but we're animals.
We're angels, too.
Can you explain to me why some vegans won't use wool?
I don't know. Maybe because the animals have not, the sheep have not given them permission.
How about honey?
Hunting.
Honey.
Oh, honey.
Honey.
Yes.
Do they think that the individual bees are tethered to the hive?
Well, the thing
and
is...
And we're colonializing them because we take what they're producing?
Of course we are. We're using
it. Yeah.
They're not making that honey for us.
That's what they're doing. They're making honey.
Right. So you're trying to mock ad absurdum. You try to take the argument to an extreme, and then you say, see, that's silly.
I had an argument with a person who was addicted to heroin about him telling me that I was killing myself with the burgers that I was eating. And my first answer was that people who
cheaper than heroin.
People that can't wear long sleeves or have to wear long sleeves don't get to criticize what I put in my body. And the second thing was, how do you feel that the sheep are being exploited by the wool that I'm wearing?
Okay. Now we're way up. I don't know. We'll have to ask Laura Kilman, the senior flavor scientist at Impossible Foods, how she feels about wool.
Yeah, explain that to me, hippies.
What does it taste like? Wool. Okay, coming up, we've got the letters.
Letters!
And wrapping up the week.
Not a moment too soon.
L.A., here I come. Welcome back to the Tom and Curly Show. Tom Tangney here, John Curly away on vacation, Danny O'Neill filling in. And about now, again, I want to thank you, Danny, for filling in a couple of times this week. And now let's look for that postal guy.
I'm the mailman. As you can see, I'm the mailman. Don't nobody mess with me. I'm the mailman. If you didn't know, I'm the mailman. I bring the mail to your door.
Okay, Danny, as we wrap up this week and this day, what do you see in that mailbag there you like?
From Ann and Everett on the border wall and shutdown, here's my thing with this wall issue. Why now? Why the big push now? He had 2 years with Republican Congress. He's just looking for a scapegoat in the Democrats. Trump is holding the federal workers hostage. This is all on him. Come on now. Why is no one recognizing this?
And 360, Danny, no wall. It's caving. President campaigned for Mexico to pay for it, not us. If the cost isn't really that much, they can put that back in areas where the cuts were made that are important to citizens.
From the 253, $53 billion for sound transit, and we're complaining about wall money.
On the people being choosier in their work environments, yeah, there's a new trend apparently, because we can afford to do that, that we're deciding not so much what the job is or what the salary is, but whether we're a good cultural fit with that company before we accept a job. 206. One thing I used to do when I was interviewing for a job at a particular employer is that I would take inventory of the employee cars in the parking lot. And if they were newer vehicles and nicer vehicles, then it typically meant that the current employees felt secure and were doing well in their jobs.
Next is Inslee for president from the 206. Inslee puts the goober in gubernatorial. He has vice presidential candidate written all over him.
Oh, that's mean. And 360, Inslee won't do well outside the West Coast. He has zero connection to the blue-collar workers in the Rust Belt. Yeah, that could be a flaw.
Flying tips. We mean this by tipping flight attendants from the 206. Flight attendants make $30 to $40 an hour. Servers make a fraction of that.
Wow. Oh, that's interesting.
I think that depends on which airline you're at. I think if you're not in a union, you're working at Frontier or Southwest, I would bet that you make dramatically less than that.
Okay, interesting. 425 on the same topic. Flight attendants are not there for your pleasure. They are there for your safety. No to tipping them.
From the 206, that reduces the flight attendant job to wait staff. I prefer to think of them as airline professionals that I can count on if a plane crashes to save my life. Tipping them makes me think of Applebee's, not life and death safety.
Fair enough. Yeah, and there are a number of
Some of the unions are opposing it, saying no, pay them a better wage. Don't give people the option to tip.
That's exactly right. That's what I was trying to stumble around to say. On the Critics' Choice Awards this Sunday, 7:07. Gloria from 7:07. Tom, stop underestimating your audience. We love black and white subtitled films. Netflix got in trouble, in fact, for using Castilian Spanish subtitles. We're cinephiles. Well, that's good to hear. Not everybody is, but thanks.
From the 206, it's weird and gross hearing Tom say Bradley Cooper is hunky. Why? He's hunky.
Well, the thing is, I was also
factually accurate
using that word derisively, too, and I guess it didn't really come up. But that's one of the reasons why I think he's a front runner. He may be good at his job, but he's also something that some people like to look on. Let's do football.
Okay. From the 425, Danny, I think Joe Namath or Joe Montana may be the greatest QBs ever. Not Tom or anyone recent. Do I have a recency bias?
Yeah, maybe so. Don't we all?
Who's the best quarterback
ever in the history of the game? Oh, probably, you know, who's that guy? Johnny Unitas.
Really?
That was before my time, and I always heard he was like the last great quarterback before I started paying attention to football. So I figured, oh, he's probably the greatest. No?
No, I think it's Tom Brady.
You think it's Tom Brady? Oh, you recent bias.
I know.
Okay. 425, I've never been a Pats fan, but Tom Brady is the greatest quarterback ever, hands down. He has multiple Super Bowl rings, millions of dollars, and is married to a supermodel. What does that have to do with whether he's a great quarterback or not? None of which can be said about you. If you hate him, it's due to jealousy. Deal with it.
All of that's true, and I do hate him.
That's right.
From Linda and Botha, once the Seahawks tapped out, the football season was over for me, but I have discovered a consolation. This season, I decided the Sonics aren't coming back in my lifetime, and I discovered that all the Portland Trailblazers games are carried on TV up here. It's true. Comcast Sports Northwest. Talk about a likable team. Portland is full of Seahawks fans. Why can't Seattle return the favor for the Blazers?
There we go.
And now it is time for the
jump ahead to the letter of the day from 206. Did I hear you say we just tied a new record with the government shutdown? Let's keep it going. Then, 30 years from now, we can brag to those little punks just born about how bad we had it in our days compared to them and their fancy driving cars. Looking for the golden parachute. Thanks, Danny.
Bye.
Thanks, Tom.
Bye.